Welcome to, back to episode 7 of Keep Me Different. Glad you guys can join. Listen, I don't want any slings and arrows for what I'm about to say, but I just got to say this. Should we really be surprised and shocked when we read statistical numbers about black people in corporate America for the higher paying positions or being laid off or wanting to go start their own businesses? I mean, I can only speak for myself personally. When I hear such things, I'm like, and? Okay, what did you expect? We're not living in our own construct that we made and controlled, right? Corporate America, for all intents and purposes, was a white, or is a white constructed thing that we are, God, this is probably gonna really sound bad, but we, to some degree, may be asking or pandering or attempting to infiltrate, kind of like coming into someone's home and saying, hey, I would like for you to build an extra seat for me at your table that you actually originally constructed for you and your people.
I would say that we need people both in the inside and in the outside. Because if you want anything to change, it always has to start inside, right? Of like, if we're saying just corporate America and where it stands today.
Even if it's inside their home.
Yeah, because you can't change anything outside of it. Yeah. In a sense, you know what I mean? So I'm saying if I get into the home and now you're outside of the home, I can be an advocate for you. I can look to grab tools and bring them back out. You know what I mean? Like things of that nature. I can work to then also develop skills that will continue to push me further down the path. I think everyone's perspective in their journey is different. I don't think.
Let me ask you this question.
Just go ahead.
You said advocate and then tools. To me, in my mind, that's two separate things, right? When you get inside their house,
yep.
Are you looking to advocate for me to get them to let me inside their house? Or are you looking to get some tools out of their house, throw it out the window, and then at nighttime, late at night, help me build my own house?
So if we're dealing with a structure and a home that is already well established, and we're looking to create and build our own, I think you still do need more inside as well as outside, if that makes sense. Like, because for us to even understand an infrastructure that we want to create, we have to understand the infrastructure that we're in right now.
Okay.
And that me advocating for you to be a part of something within the house, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't see that there's a problem. It's when I think you start to just depend on the infrastructure that's already built.
Okay.
I agree with that, yeah.
Because everything is now you're looking at how things are truly set up in the house.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not for you.
Yeah.
You know?
So the radical black studies in me is like, nothing can change from the inside.
Really?
Yeah. Usually it's not. Like, just because like, the inside has a vested interest in keeping things exactly the same,
right?
So it's like, sure, maybe little like things can change that are like surface level, kind of like minute changes of like, okay, maybe we have like some elevated diversity numbers at the corporate job, or we might have like the first black person here, but like tangible change, I don't know can happen within the corporate structure. Like in its existing form.
Right.
I'm not sure.
I would agree with you.
But I do think you do need inside outside. I agree with that. Because you can use the tools that you found inside to create structures outside that are probably more helpful to black people or can like put more agency into black people's hands. The problem is when a lot of black people get into these corporate structures, a lot of them are going to be very enticed by the salaries
100%.
And start to lose their idea of like, especially at the high end, like if you even could get like to super high, see if you even get there, you know, we know that only 1% of black, like of CEOs in Fortune 500 companies are black, right? It's super low. It's like under 10 people, 5 people. I think when you get to that level, it's very hard to walk away from the money for some people, I think. And then, like, I don't know at that point if you're going to be so useful to others around other Black people, or if you're willing to, like, fully just break out of that system that has benefited you so well at that point.
100%.
I think that's really, the money is where people start to get very, like,
tight. Yeah, I agree.
The money, like, gets
my,
people.
My experience has been all over the place with corporate America and being an employee and working for a Fortune 5 company, basically. Around, you do see some leaders that, you know, started off as a director, senior director, that then make it to the VP, and once was like, hey, we need to be building a community, is now the door is closed. There's no real communication, only through passing. It's a high, and you know what I mean? And are those the leaders that you really want in these rooms that are supposed to be representing, you know, the whole at that corporation, being the one leading? And 7 times out of 10, I would say no, because they're looking at it from a subjective point of view of where they are.
Yeah.
And not actually going back to, you know, the level of where a lot of Black employees are, which is like middle management or entry level jobs. And they forget that and don't have that vision or that foresight to understand that there's others that are going to be coming behind you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would argue too that the people who are even successful enough to make it there are probably extremely unlikely to want to bring other people back, because like the way that they fought tooth and nail to even get there, they're like, good luck to y'all.
I did my battle.
They're like, I'm done. Because it's so hard to even get there.
Right.
So I feel like they usually aren't the leaders that you want.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oftentimes I find that's usually the case. And listen, if you're a person of color and you come into a situation like that, you'd be foolish to not acknowledge the fact that there's probably going to be a ceiling placed over your head.
Oh yeah.
But let's just say you're fortunate enough to break through that ceiling. You're of that elite elk.
1%.
That 1% or less, right?
Yeah.
I know that there's an ego-driven aspect to it where it's like, shit, I bust my ass and I beat all these white people out. Now I'm the boss now, I'm here. I think something gets lost in that. As opposed to having that thought process where, okay, I made it through. I'm only busting through this door because I'm trying to bring all y'all through with me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Usually it starts off like that, and then when they get to the top, it's like, man, I got here.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I'm saying?
Good luck, y'all.
I even beat my own people. Good
Pour
luck.
Pouring out to y'all. Like, pray for y'all.
The fittest.
Yeah.
And I was going to say that, you know, one of the things too is like, are you bringing the right people along? If you are doing it, and that's can be a little bit tricky as well. It's like, yes, we want our whole community to advance, but just like any other communities, just like human beings in general, there may be some bad apples in the in the batch.
Yeah. Within our
yeah.
Could you expound upon that?
Of yes, and I am rooting for anyone that is Black to advance, right?
Yeah.
But, Karen with the disclaimer.
But some of those, but I'm just saying that some, when they do advance, may not be the right ones to continue to carry the torch
facts.
And bring others.
Okay,
with them.
You said facts. You backed him up. I'll agree with both of you to a certain point. And this is what I mean. And I was of that same mindset. I would say that.
I love us. Like,
huh?
I said, I love us.
I love us.
I love us too.
I love us.
But we're not without flaws.
We're not without flaws, but we also are not given the same amount of grace that they are given. If we fall short to any degree, we get kicked back down to the bottom. They can fall short 10, 15, 20 times and still get those opportunities.
Get promoted up.
And some cases get promoted up.
Yeah.
So it's a double thing going on for us, because you're fighting against them that are not giving you nothing but maybe one chance if you get that at all. Mm-hmm. And then your own people that are like, hey, one more man, I can't. I've heard the stupid term, like, man, you know what I'm saying? Niggas out here, they ain't doing their job like they're supposed to do their job. And it's like, well, I don't think they've been given the opportunity to refine their skills. Right. To do that job. They haven't... when you watch black movies, black directors, something, right? You'll see the cliche, stereotypical, yada, yada, whatnot. And then we'll harp on that black director and we'll cook him, myself included. Mm-hmm. And we'll destroy him and we'll say, oh, he's making black caricatures of us. This is not how we are, this, that, and the other. But white people get afforded the opportunity to do all sorts of things.
Yeah.
All the time.
We're not allowed to be mediocre.
We're not allowed to be mediocre.
But this is also why I have an issue with black excellence, though.
Oh, talk to me about it. Talk to me about it.
I hate that phrase. And I think some of it is like corporate too, because it's just like, it's this, I think black excellence as an idea is using like white standards of success to like, we're measuring ourselves against that. Like black, when I think of black excellence, like I do think of like a Jay-Z and Beyonce, right? And like, to be fair, with the Jay-Z NFL thing, nah. And because he was the one, because he was like, okay, we're done kneeling, right? With the Colin Kaepernick, right? So he said we're done kneeling, which arguably Jay-Z cannot be the voice of the activism.
Right.
Like, he's a billionaire. You can no longer be an activist and a billionaire.
Who can be an activist?
I'm not totally sure, but not a billionaire though.
So you have to be
a billionaire basically negates your ability to be activist.
Because
to acquire a net worth of a billion, you had to. Like, think about just like the dispersed, like how wealth is dispersed throughout the world. Like, you have a certain amount of wealth that, like, what, like less than like 0.001%, right?
What would be considered selling out, I guess? Because also, I think behind we're not kneeling anymore, we're done kneeling, how I took it was, what's the next step past kneeling?
Okay.
That's how I looked at that.
I think on the surface it looks like that, but when Jay-Z's in a room full of NFL corporate executives,
say the right words,
and he says that,
yeah,
now he's speaking for all of us as people, right?
Right.
And
yes,
he has a huge monetary gain from having this deal with the NFL, right? So like that biases his intentions to begin with.
Got it.
Right? Like he has a lot of money to be made by this deal. So it's very convenient to be like, oh, we're off the kneeling. And for him to be like, this is the next step happens to conveniently be this deal that I can now have with NFL. That's a lot of money's going in my pocket.
I don't know.
Okay.
Because being like him being or making that comment and taking those next steps or the deal, right?
Yeah.
Is also bringing attention to our communities, our artists, our entertainers that maybe once didn't have the platform or was just overlooked, in the sense of, we talk about this a lot of times, of like, you know, these type of corporations that are taking influence and loving our culture but not really putting our culture in the position to really win and to thrive and to empower our culture, you know what I mean? So I feel like his step into now sitting at a table gives the next person, because he's the first one over the hill. So he's going to take targets and hits no matter what decision he makes, right? But can that next person come in behind him and not only stand on his shoulders, but then also create something that is more for us, I guess?
Yeah.
But why did he have to knock down the activism to do that? Like, why do you have to use the vehicle of Colin Kaepernick's activism and his story of being blacklisted by the NFL? Why did he have to use that as a tool to move the needle this way? Like, use it as a leveraging tool, more or less. I don't know how I feel about that, as like, because I don't see Jay-Z as reflecting the average black person anymore.
Right? Well, here's the thing. Unfortunately, we as a people, we lean towards entertainment.
Yeah.
Entertainment is our thing. It's our shtick. It's often it's what's made us millionaires. It's what's allowed
us. It's what's made some of us millionaries.
Some of us millionaires. Yes. Thank you for correcting me.
A very small percentage of us millionaires.
But still, it's that bit of light in the dark for us, right? That aspiration. That's why young black children lean towards, I want to play football, I want to play basketball, I want to do comedy, I want to entertainment and sports is that small bit of light that we see in the dark, right? That's been highlighted in right. our community. So with that being said, the guy that's at the top of the hill of that is a Jay-Z. People give him the affordability and the liberty to speak for us and say, well, this we're done kneeling. This is how it's going to be. Here's the thing. You know, and during the pandemic, I heard this guy say this when he was like, we're asking people that own the hospitals our kids go to, the schools our kids go to, feed us, clothe us. We're asking them to say sorry for what they've done for 400 years. He was like, that's never going to happen unless you have true independence. Mm-hmm. You're calling your own shots. You're creating your own opportunities. Unless you're really, really doing that, and it's growing from black soil, from pure black soil, right?
Yeah.
You'll never, ever get to that point where you can open up doors freely and say what you want to say freely.
Right.
I think the twisted thing about it is that the thing that's confounding to us is that you love our culture. You love everything that we do and create. But then you hate us. It's kind right. of a yeah. mind fuck.
It's a
mind fuck. So you wake up and they love you, but they hate you, but they love you, but they hate you, but they yeah. love you, but they hate you. You want to eradicate us, but you don't want to eradicate the things that permeate from us.
But it goes to your first point earlier when you're like, when someone says that they didn't get a job or something like that, or whatever it may be, is that, are you surprised? But you just explain why I can be surprised at times is because it showed like they loved our culture. It showed like, you know, they were fucking with me.
Yeah.
So then I sit down and to come to find out, oh, you're not. You're just actually an observer and you just want to be a part of the audience and just watch our culture and be entertained, but not actually really put in the work or allow us to come in and actually change shit up.
That's a great point.
So there's like a direct intersection of like, and me and my friends, we call it the palatable black person
yeah.
that thrives in corporate America, right? Where it's like, you can put the white corporate America onto like our culture and the sauce. Like you are that person, but you're also palatable enough and like cooperative enough yeah. that you're not trying to like fuck up the whole institution. They love that black person.
So
that's the only black person that thrives in corporate America. But
does that come to then the, because again, being in that space, you're kind of still being a part of that space of showing up as your authentic self. I hate that term because I don't think it's real at all. And for you to say that to mm-hmm. anybody is like, you're kind of setting them up for failure. In a sense,
like, do you mean like it when jobs tell you they want you to show up as your authentic
yes,
self?
Oh, yes, yeah, sorry.
That's
yeah.
a trap.
Yes.
That's a trap.
Yeah. Because, you know, there's still professionalism that has yeah. to be thought about. There's still the way you carry yourself. You know what I mean? Like, you can't show up as truly as how you would show up at the crib talking to your boys or your family. Like, that's not a real thing in the sense of the infrastructure that has been built. Now, if you created your own, yeah. that's a whole different conversation. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You know, it's so funny that the palatable black person that you're talking about. I remember.
That's such a great term.
It's a great fucking term.
Shout out to my friend Chris. He's the originator.
Shout out to you, Chris.
Yeah.
Because it makes me think of two examples. Years ago, before Will Smith became the megastar that he became, a pretty, at the time, well-known Hollywood executive said to me, Will Smith was going to be the next big star.
Mm.
And listen, I grew up listening to Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. I thought Will Smith was the most gangster thing because he related to me, like the black nerdy dudes.
Yeah.
I remember back in the days when Big Daddy Kane called him soft and everything. And then on the radio, he came on and he elocuted himself so well and destroyed Big Daddy Kane, saying, you know, defending yeah. just because he's an educated guy doesn't mean, you know, all this stuff. I've always looked up to Will Smith from He's the DJ, I'm the Rapper albums because I'm old. But when this guy said this to me, I said, well, man, you know, Will Smith ain't the greatest black actor. There's a whole bunch of younger black actors that I think are amazing. And then he didn't even proceed to name any of those black actors. He's like, they're irrelevant. He started comparing Will to the Jake Gyllenhaal, Tobey Maguire, and Leonardo DiCaprio. And he was like, the reason why Will is going to leapfrog all of them is because he's what you said.
Highly powerful. And like, I like Will.
And I love
him. I have no qualms with Will. Like, I don't think he's a bad person ever, but he's definitely palatable.
And he said that. The motherfucker, and he was a white guy, and the motherfucker said to me, verbatim, you can invite him into your house with your family. The motherfucker said this to me. Did not know it was a racist term.
That's what
he was like, you can invite, oh, he's like, O'Neal, you can invite Will into your house and, you know, you don't feel like anything's going to be done. And I was looking, I'm like, this is how these motherfuckers think.
So imagine that sitting in a meeting and someone says like shit like that of like corporate America and like being black and like the constant daily challenge of having to show up knowing that one, these white people don't understand you or don't get you just at a fundamental level. To then the competition, because usually it's a lot of type A just people around in corporate, you know what I mean?
In like, corporate America.
So you start to put all these layers and start to add these layers up that, you know, corporate America gets very challenging and tough if you have a vision or a mind that wants to go beyond that. Like, as a competitor, I attack everything in the sense of competition, like my mentality. Not that I'm competing against you or I'm competing. It's really myself and what I'm trying to strive to do.
Yeah.
And when you get into these settings and that glass ceiling that you actually see the glass, that's the thing. I don't think a lot of people see the glass. But it's like, yo, that's glass.
And the job also has a vested interest to disguise the glass.
Right.
They're like, oh, there's infinite.
Yeah.
But there isn't.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Are you your... Go ahead, go ahead.
No, you got it.
Are you... This is a two-part thing. Are you your authentic self when you're in corporate America?
I would say I'm the closest I can be while being aware of the settings that I'm in.
God damn. That's the most politically correct response ever.
But in a sense, like truly, like that's... But that's how I move in general. Like, I'm a very aware person.
Yeah.
So no matter if I'm going to dinner with someone that I don't know, to going to a party, to I'm just aware of things around me and I move accordingly. That's authentic to myself, though.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
So with that being said, Michelle.
Yeah.
For instance, wait, real quick example. Ahead. I love music.
Yeah.
In some settings, you're not. They don't want you to listen to music. In some settings, they don't have that space or whatever. But for me, my desk was like in the corner. It was open. This is when like everything became that we're more of a community and inclusive and all that. And I just wear headphones throughout my work, no matter what. And when people come up, I'll pop them to the back to understand. I know what you're saying. I press pause. I'm good. But that was looked at as, you can be intimidating.
Oh my God.
I'm so glad you said that. Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because that's the excellent segue into the second part of my statement here. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Majors, right?
Mm-hmm.
When Cat Williams was talking about him on Club Shay Shay, and he was like, you know, big nose black man walking around all cop. And we talk about the whole Will Smith guy who's, you know, not threatening, not scary. I felt as though, because John walked around with extreme
hubris.
I wasn't going to say hubris. I was going to say confidence. He walked out on that stage, mad swag, like a powerful black man walking in his power, doing his thing. He intimidated a lot of white people. And I even was told by a very well-known, extremely well-known popular actor, the motherfucker said to me, you know, O'Neal, if John would have just like, you know, when everything started, he's like just toned down his, you know, and I was like, guess what? Yeah, and you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Toned down his, and this person was not black. Person of color, but not black.
Oh, boy.
Tone down his black masculinity. Now, mind you, Michelle, I'm not talking about anything that he's been accused of. I'm not talking about any of that. Tone down his black masculinity. You know, fly under the radar a little bit. Don't walk around with your dick all out, swinging it like you the man, this, that, and the other. He would, maybe he'd be able to skate by and skate through this and come out on top and survive and whatnot. And it made me think to myself, like, why does the black man, and white America, maybe y'all can help me out with this. Why does the black man have to diminish his power? Why can't he walk into a room and be who he is fully and authentically. I mean, the times we see it is when we're amongst each other, right? I've seen the most gooned out niggas.
I love the phrase "gooned."
Right? So comes from the gooned out niggas who act goonish with me and all the other brothers around. Get around white people, right? And the code switching occurs.
Oh, the code switching.
Wait a minute. Why aren't you authentically yourself? Obviously, we know why, because there is something that could be lost. You want them to do something for you, or they could put a glass ceiling over your head.
Yeah.
And I just feel like part of why I think John was so chastised and alienated is because he intimidated white people. Here's a dude with an amazing skill set, was not apologetic about who he was, walked around confidently, didn't, and again, I'm the biggest Will Smith fan ever, so I'm not saying Will is who Will is.
Right.
Will wasn't, I don't think he was pandering, he was just who he is. But he was just probably the antithesis of that, but could deliver on every time through his performances. I think that confidence scared people. And I think as a result of that...
Confidence, black confidence in corporate America...
It's a scary thing.
Scares people.
They don't love it. They don't love it.
They don't know what to do with it.
They don't know what to do with
it. They can't. They don't know how to manage it. They can't control it. They don't understand it. Like, you know what I mean? And these are the people that think they're in power, looking at someone that's actually walking with power.
Yes.
You know
what
I mean?
Say that again, bro.
And that's...
Oh, my God. Say that. That's so true.
Yeah. I don't got another bar. That was just my
bar
for the day.
That's a bar right there.
That's a bar.
But it's very frustrating, especially if you, like, enjoy what you're doing. You know what I mean? Like, the work that you're doing,
like,
and all that.
You as a black person enjoy.
Yeah. Sorry. Like, if you like the company that you're at, if you like the brand that you're working at, you know what I mean? Like, it's frustrating because it's like, yo, I'm just trying to give my all and work at the highest level that I can work at, but I have to deal with your microaggressions every day. I have to deal with all the things outside of the actual job that I'm trying to complete and do.
That's happened to me in a corporate setting before. I won't say where, but I'm not going back to corporate America, so it doesn't really matter. But I was working at an advertising agency, and I was working under a white woman, and I was copywriting. I do feel like I was a better writer than her. I was more experienced, at least just from like an education standpoint, more experienced, just keeping it a buck. Like I went to college for this. I care about this a lot. And I enjoy doing, like, I love writing, right?
Right.
I don't know that she really loved writing. I think she was doing it because it was part of her job in this advertising agency. So I was writing some copy, and the copy I wrote performed really well. And she loved it, right? But then I think at a certain point, as it was more celebrated and getting more, you know, I was continuing to write things, and it was social media, so then there was metrics, right? So like some of the stuff I wrote performed higher than what she was writing. Okay, but you're making more money than me, girl. Who cares?
Yeah.
Right? We're still working at this corporate job.
Right.
And I think there was like an animosity about it, to be honest. And I think like it really made the work environment really hostile for me, because I felt like there was like a competition of sort, even though I wasn't good. I'm just doing my job because you're telling me I'm doing well by writing this content. But then it seems like you're also like upset that I'm doing well. And then I do remember when I decided I was going to go to grad school, cause I didn't want to be in advertising anyway. And then there was some animosity about that too, where it was like, it felt like I'm moving somewhere and you don't like that.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're not even worried about her.
I'm not even worried. I'm just trying to live and survive.
Biggest thing. Like, I don't give two.
Yeah. I'm making $10 an hour.
I'm trying to actually do a great job so that I can advance and move forward, which I think a lot of, I can go on about middle management and how, you know, they put people in these positions that don't actually know how to manage people or lead.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing. You're calling them leaders.
Just because they're good at their job, and then now you get to manage people.
Yes.
And you have no management skills.
No.
I don't understand that. It's always chaos. Yeah.
100%. And it's a fail every time, I think, especially for black employees, because 9 times, 10 times out of 10, it's a white manager that's leading a black employee, or that's managing a black employee, and hasn't even set up time to sit down and actually talk with this person to actually understand how they work, what their skill set truly is. It's just like a plug and play of promotions and of lateral moves and things of that nature, is that it's always fascinating to see how these companies obviously are making the money that they're making, but internally they're so fucked up.
Yeah. What's the term? I purposely did not learn this term because it irritates me. Diversity and inclusion term, DEI.
DEI. Performative, yes.
DEI. Now, obviously, a lot of these right-wing politicians are, you know, doing their best to get rid of it and whatnot. And there's a, you know, sect of us that are trying to fight to keep it alive and well. I personally don't think we should lean on it as a culture. I don't, because they're weaponizing it. They're like, we want to take this away from you, and then when we take this away from you, we'll be able to strip you down and weaken you. And from our point of view, we're like, no, don't take this away from us. We need this.
But they're not only weaponizing it; they're using it as a marketing tool.
Yeah, they're using it as a gold star. Yeah. Like, oh, we're this liberal company. We're this liberal school.
I do think we still need it.
We still need it. That's the thing. It's a flawed tool, but we do still need it.
Because I think, you know, reading up just more on DEI and all that, there was an article, but I forgot the name, that they called out that DEI should be actually a business function. So just like there's metrics for different categories and businesses for your company, mm-hmm. and you get graded off of that, mm-hmm. is that you should truly get graded and have metrics built around teams, categories, as well as functions of DEI. So now that actually influences and possibly can really dictate the bottom line in some cases.
Yeah.
Because that's what it always comes down to, is like the bottom line. Is like, are we making money or are we not?
Yeah.
And DEI is used as more of a program than it is as a function and as a business. And that should actually be incorporated across your whole entire company, and not just look at HR as like, hey, there's a problem, we need more black people in the company, or we need to set up these programs where managers can understand their diverse team. You know what I mean? Like, that's just things that managers should already be thinking about in the first place.
Yeah.
But if I'm not going to hold you accountable, because that's what it comes down to, is accountability.
Yes.
Of that, you as a manager, director, anybody in a leadership role or executive is getting measured with DEI also being a part of that metrics.
No, I mean, I agree. And the part about you saying we still need it to a certain degree, I just feel like it automatically creates some animosity between you and, let's just say, your white counterpart that's not racist, right? Because you'll hear a white motherfucker be like, oh, I was more qualified, but they brought this person in.
But the thing is, the animosity is going to be there regardless, even if you're super qualified, because, you know, I grew up in a very white, like, neighborhood, and I went to NYU. My brother got into NYU, too. You know, these white kids were like, oh, he just went because he plays basketball. My brother had stopped playing basketball in 10th grade. Yeah. Like, you don't even play anymore, but that's how he got in, right? Like, they're always going to say that. So it's like, I kind of don't care at that point, right? It's like, I know I'm supposed to be there. That's it. Like, but honestly, tools like that at least give you a higher chance to get in, right? Because, like, if not, there's no accountability, right? Yeah. There's like, oh, well, now no one's looking at us, so let's just only let white people in.
And not even that in a sense. I think they go to just what's comfortable to them, which is
whiteness. Yeah.
So let me just play devil's advocate. Let me speak fantastically for a moment here. We're trying to get in to do what? We live in an age now where we're just every minute on the hour, we're discovering the things that we thought we needed to be a success, we don't need.
Yeah.
That's the question you should be asking yourself personally. That's what I think, like, is why are you wanting to go to
a corporate job,
this specific job?
I think that's because
it could be fulfilling. Like, they can fulfill, like, I have a purpose of telling stories through Disney, and Disney's the best storyteller out there.
So
you know what I mean?
So is
but
that,
you can create your own,
but you can also create your own.
But that's a question you got to ask yourself.
I, Garen, that's well said. I wholeheartedly believe that, because I think it's an old, antiquated way of thinking, not just for people of color, especially for people of color.
Yeah.
But not just for people of color. The world in general, right? I've been told that if I go to school for 4 years, get in debt, graduate, make this certain amount of money, and work for this Fortune 500 company, that my life will be set. And I get these certain amount of days off. I meet this person, have 2.5 kids. I'll travel two times out of the year, and this is it. And I'm just waiting to die.
Confirm that's a lie. hasn't happened to me. Have 2 degrees has not happened to me yet. So not quite a truth. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, going back to what you said, I think that's a question you need to personally ask yourself. You're asking for DEI to be around. You want to use it to get in to their house, making this full circle. Yeah. And now you're here. You're in their house. That's their water fountain. That's their mug in the counter. Don't touch it. That's their bed. That's their keys to their car.
Yeah.
That's their underwear and clothes. Don't touch it.
You're using their computer, all kinds of stuff.
That's wild.
You're using their cell phone.
Yeah, you're fucking in the house. You just stand in the middle of the fucking floor. Yeah. You can't touch shit. So now
stipend is theirs. Like, yes. Bought the chair that you bought with their stipend. It's all theirs.
It's all theirs. So now you're here. Congratulations. Ha ha. What do you do? And I find that people, I'm going to go back to black people specifically, that get into corporate America and they figure that out and they're standing in the middle of that living room, right? There's a bit of like, oh man, this is not what I thought this was going to be. And I fought so hard to get here.
Yes, it's disillusioning.
It's disillusioning.
Deeply.
Yeah.
You know? Listen, I want to pick back up on this on the next episode, because there's a question I want to ask you, Michelle, but we ran out of time. We're just going to start needing, we're going to need more time. This has been Keep Me Different. We'd like you to like. We would love for you to subscribe. And just, listen, hey, if you're cleaning the house, right?
There we go.
That's a good activity better. For a podcast.
Yeah, right? That's
more
better.
More palatable.
That's more, yeah, exactly. More palatable. And I want to be that. What's the word?
Palatable.
I want to be more palatable, right? I don't want you to take a shit and listen to the podcast. Yeah. I don't want you to do that. But if you need
to. You can help yourself.
Be your authentic self, though.
Be your authentic self. Thank you.
I love us.